Hey guys, Mike with FlightBridge Ed. I've been an EMS training officer since 2008, and I don't know how many times I've had to deliver the bad news to someone about an expired certification. That means no work. That's where Piace comes in to save the day. Never be caught off guard again with an expired cert. Go to the App Store for your device and search for Piace, P-I-A-C-E-T, the one-stop application to manage and share all of your certifications. You know you don't want to be that guy or gal, and don't rely on your agency to tell you about your certifications. Go to Piace to manage your own certs and have some peace of mind. Download Piace today.
The content of this podcast is based on medical fact and evidence-based practice from credible authoritative sources, but is not a substitute for your institution's policies, procedures, common sense, or good judgment. The views and opinions are those of Eric Bauer and FlightBridge Ed in their entirety. This is the FlightBridge Ed Podcast, critical care and emergency medicine education for nurses and paramedics. Here's your host, Eric Bauer.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the FlightBridge Ed Podcast. Mike Verkess sitting in with Eric Bauer for what has become an annual tradition for us. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. How's everybody doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I hope our listeners are doing well. But this is going to be our top five podcasts of the previous year. So for us, this is going to be 2018. And I think this is the third time we've done this. We did 2016, 2017. And of course, it's January, almost February of 2019. So I thought it would be a good time to go back and look and discuss a little bit about each podcast that made it into the top five.
Yeah, I think it's amazing when you look back at specific topics, topics that I probably in the beginning wouldn't think would be the top podcast. Obviously, from the start, we've been a clinical podcast, and I think some of the podcast episodes we're going to talk about in the top five definitely don't fit that pure clinical topic.
Yeah,
and I think it just shows that I have to open my mind up a little bit and realize that you, the listeners, want other things.
Yeah, and it was pretty shocking too. I mean, we'll go through each episode here and talk about numbers, but the first place podcast, it wasn't even close.
No.
Like it had almost 5,000 more downloads than any other one. So it's pretty cool. So let's jump right in and get to the number five podcast of 2018. And that was an episode that was released on May 5th of 2018. And that was an episode with you and Bruce Hoffman. And it was the nightmare patient Tylenol toxicity. And I think that one came as a bit of a surprise to you. And that one had just about 10,000 downloads.
Yeah, I think that is a topic that's a hot topic in advanced certification exam.
Absolutely.
In our course when we do our endocrine lecture. We talk about it a little bit, and then we really talk about it in the tox lecture. And we also actually touch on it in the the acid-base balance side.
Sure.
We're starting to talk about acidosis. When we look at Tylenol toxicity, I think that is a topic that, we see a demographic patient, whether that's teenage up to, I guess the sky's the limit,
sure,
honestly. But these patients sometimes are not presenting in a way that elicits anything to be worried about.
For sure. Well, and I think that is the nature of the Tylenol ingestion in a toxic form, because we know that we sort of divide up Tylenol toxicity in about four different phases, right? So in that first phase, that 0 to 24 hours, and this is one of the things I talk about the review course, is most of the time people are pretty disappointed in the results of a Tylenol ingestion, thinking that maybe it's it's not that it's funny, but in that first 24 hours, they may take, let's say they decide to take a half a bottle of Tylenol. They're not going to feel anything, but maybe a little gut ache. And that's about it. So it's not going to serve the purpose they thought. But what they don't realize is that physiologically, there is a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, right? Liver enzymes are starting to be elevated. And again, in the background, the wheels are turning and the damage is being caused. It's just not ending their life like they thought they were going to. Now, as things roll into that 24 to 48 to 72 hours, when they start rolling into phase two, they start developing that right upper quadrant pain. They start developing nausea. Maybe they're not hungry. They don't feel like eating anything. And that's really when the intervention that we can do for them is to get them to some kind of a, you know, definitive care and start getting some acetylcysteine on board to actually start taking care of this. But that's when really people are going to start noticing those effects from the ingestion.
Yeah, and I think you hit it perfect. I think, you know, moving from phase two, which is, you know, that 12 to 24, and then you move to phase three. Phase three is always the hot phase.
Yeah.
That's where you start having, you know, electrolyte imbalances. You start having hypokalemia. You know, metabolic acidosis is rampant at this point. And, you know, usually this phase starts, depending on the literature you read, from 18 to 24 hours. So there's some overlap from phase two to phase three.
Sure.
But phase three is the deciding factor.
Yeah, I was going to say it's the make it or break it time, right? They either find some way so they get some treatment or they proceed to almost organ failure at this point, the beginnings of their organ failure.
Yeah, absolutely. If they make it through phase three, usually they're good to go.
Yeah.
So I think the one of the big focuses, we'll just end with this, is with this podcast, we touched on the metabolite of acetaminophen toxicity, and that's oxaproline. Oxaproline is part of the new acidosis acronym, GOLDMARK. And I talked about GOLDMARK when we looked at the acidosis rodeo part 1, 2, and 3. So O in gold is oxaproline, and that is the metabolite of acetaminophen. And once that starts breaking down from acetaminophen to oxaproline, that's the acid aspect, and that's what ends up producing that metabolic acidosis.
Yeah. All right. So that was a great podcast. Kudos to you and Bruce for knocking that one out of the park. Again, just about 10,000 downloads. The number four position coming in strong at number four was an episode that was released. It was the first episode, actually, of 2018, and that was The Silent Killer in RSI. And this was actually a literature review of a paper that was released that was looking at the mortality associated with the administration of SUX in certain patient populations. And this was people that had a high injury severity score, so a 15 or higher in the injury severity score. So tell us a little bit about that episode and a little bit about that paper.
I really enjoyed this podcast because we had done an earlier podcast when this abstract was released. I had, I guess, kind of sidebar information that was coming out. I was given this
inside information.
Yep. And, you know, this study was done by John Sackles and his colleagues at University of Tucson, obviously a mentor of Dave Olivares. And, you know, we've always used succinylcholine. And I think the key thing that I've learned is sometimes you have to ask, why are we still doing this? Why did we start doing this? The more literature that comes out, the more studies that come out, the more information that comes out. You know, Scott Weingart and Rich Levitan did a study where they were specifically looking at passive oxygenation,
Absolutely.
Obviously. And they, as a secondary aspect, figured out, holy cow, patients desaturated much, much quicker, up to 2 minutes quicker when given succinylcholine. It's all based on the physiology of that medication, or the action of that medication, I should say, and how that fasciculation causes muscle, I guess, usage of oxygen, right?
It's an active process. Yeah.
And that, in a sick patient, you're burning through more oxygen, so your oxygen consumption is much more elevated.
Absolutely. So if you go back to the original paper that Weingart and Levitan did, you hit it right on the head. It was a lot of it was about pre-oxygenation and the oxygen desaturation curve, right? We know that. So if we are looking at strategies to extend the safe apnea period, for example, let's say it's somebody we cannot get saturated up above 92, 93. Right. That's, I mean, I'm just throwing that out there as an example. So we're doing everything we can. We're following the gas laws that we know, right? So there's only three ways to increase oxygenation. So we have to throw more gas at it. We put it under pressure. We expand the surface area in which the oxygen can, you know, exchange. So outside of that, there's nothing we can do. So the question then becomes, when we give succinylcholine, and the fasciculation is an active process which utilizes oxygen, they're already short on it as it is. So this literally can be the reason why we push them over the edge and they end up having arrest of some kind.
Absolutely.
So it's really not doing anybody any good. So go ahead and discuss the paper a little bit more. We had a little sidebar there, but it was still good information.
No, I think that's very valuable, and I think that'll open up another discussion. And when we look at this paper, by the way, is in the show notes under this podcast. I highly recommend you read it if you haven't taken the time. You know, that's how you learn.
Absolutely.
Read it, because I think it does a really good job in looking at the pros and cons of the study. This was obviously a retrospective study of past data. With that, when you look at the evidence and the hierarchy of evidence, a retrospective observational study is probably one of the lowest when you look at a study. But it also, in my opinion, this is my opinion, you know, I'm just a paramedic.
You're just a dude.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think there's some purity to it. There's no selection bias.
No.
Because it was prior to.
Right.
Like nobody knew there was going to be.
Yeah,
that
I was going to say everyone knows you behave a little bit different when you're being watched.
But nobody knew.
Your documentation's
knew.
A little tighter. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Everything.
Yeah.
So absolutely.
That's just my thought process. Nobody knew it was going to be studied.
Yeah.
And they point that out. And there's a great little section right here. It says the study has a few important limitations. We cannot exclude the possibility of selection bias. Now, when I read that in a paper like this, this is the authors basically. Saying the right things.
Yeah, he's taking the way out, sure.
Although we believe there's a clinical equipoise with regards to neuromuscular blockade selection in current practice as evident by the increased number of patients receiving succinylcholine compared to rocuronium in the study. If the selection bias did occur, these providers most likely would have utilized rocuronium for more severely injured patients. So I think when you look at that, You have to look back and say, all right, well, yeah, that's absolutely true. If they knew they were being studied, if they knew succinylcholine was the focus of the study, then they absolutely would have used rocuronium, right? So I think that there's definitely some purity here. When you look at a study and you read a study, when you see overall mortality rates, as it says here, our results indicated that overall mortality was similar in both groups, 23% each in the low severity cavity.
The category.
When you look at specifically the overall mortality rate, it says our overall indication shows that the overall mortality was similar in both groups in the low severity category. But when you look at the high severity category, you have a 22% increase. And this goes back to looking at succinylcholine from the original earliest studies, and they highlight this, and we're not going to spend a lot of time.
Yeah.
But the earliest studies, and even during the FDA approval process, there was some concerns about increased ICP. So you have now succinylcholine has been shown to increase oxygen consumption. In the high severity category, these patients had possibly a period of hypotension previous. They had a period of hypoxia previous, possibly. They had a high severity score, injury severity score.
So they're right? sicker patients from
they're
the
They're sicker
get-go.
Patients. And then you add that aspect to it, and I think there's definitely value. Here's my thing on this. I'm going to be bold. If you don't see this as something that's profound and you still are on the bandwagon of succinylcholine, I think you're missing the boat. I really, truly do, especially with the airway training we have nowadays. There is absolutely no reason whatsoever that you should ever have to use succinylcholine. If you use rocuronium and we go through the stages of innovation and you train and you use your salad technique and you suction that oropharynx and that glottic air opening and then you perform your innovation, even if you have a failed attempt and maybe you have a second failed attempt, you change something. Let's say you go to third failed attempt. You're going to go to a backup airway. You're never, ever going to let the paralytic wear off and bag them. That is the most ludicrous, ridiculous statement I've ever heard. And the funny thing about it is 20 years ago, I bought into that.
Yeah.
I completely believed it.
Yeah. It's only going to last 6 minutes.
I didn't question it.
Yeah. If something goes bad, you can just bag them.
And I think about it now, and I'm like, how ridiculous is that?
Yeah.
So I think that's the thing. And maybe that's a pretty bold statement, but I stand by that.
I don't think it's that bold. So knowing what I know, reading the studies out there, and there are three or four that are – pretty convincing. Like, I don't know, you know, to your point, how do you ignore that? I find that there are still some medical directors out there that ignore that because they're worried about the 30 minutes versus the 6 minutes, and we can bag them through it or whatever it happens to be. But one of the things that I learned from you was the fact that, and we won't spend a lot of time on this, but if we took a bottle of Sucks and a bottle of Rock and we covered up the labels and we sat them on the table in front of somebody and we said, okay, you're going to choose one of these paralytics. There is nothing you're going to do to prepare, to pre-oxygenate, to do your paralysis. Everything's going to be the same. You're not going to do anything different in case this one lasts longer, right?
Absolutely.
And so with all the problems, like when I'm out on the road, I teach the advanced airway portion of the review course. And if I sat there and rattled off all the contraindications or things to be aware of when we're talking about succinylcholine, it's half a page, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's half a page. People that have hyperkalemia, people that have been burned in the last, you know, that's greater than 24 hours. If they have neuromuscular disease, then the list goes on and on and on and on. When we get to the rock uranium, for example, there's nothing listed other than if they happen to be allergic to it. Because
Which,
that's sort
are you
of,
gonna know that?
How I would mean, you ever know that? Number one, you would never know that. So, I mean, just from that perspective alone, it's like it is ludicrous. I think that's a perfect description. That's a perfect word to use.
Yeah, and I think you know there are definitely some areas that you have to worry about when you're using rock uranium with a you know an initial half life of 20 to 30 minutes. You know, you definitely have to make sure you're on top of your sedation and pain management. I think you know human nature comes into play where we see a patient that is
not
laying
moving,
there,
paralyzed,
not moving,
right.
And we forget. You know, where we're so cued in. I know for me, reflecting on taking care of patients, I was so used to RSIing a patient, moving them towards the aircraft. And once I got close to the aircraft, patients usually were starting to wake up. You know, so you always made sure you had things ready to go and give them some sedation. With Rock, that's not going to happen. You know, when I found myself 5-10 minutes into a flight, holy cow, we had a busy patient, a lot of things going on, and we probably need to give some sedation, some fentanyl, and maybe some ketamine to this patient. So I think that is definitely a factor we have to worry about. You know, they even highlight this in the paper, and again, I highly recommend listening or reading it, and they highlight, well, what about these neurosurgeons that want to be able to assess their patients? It actually didn't delay time.
Yeah.
When they looked at it, by the time you called them, they got down to the patient. Very rarely did it make a delay. And even if it did, it was 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
It was very, very short.
Right.
So
unless
I think
had...
that is a very poor argument.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. All right. So again, that was The Silent Killer in RSI, released on January 4th, 2018. And that had just about 10,205 downloads. That brings us to number three, which... was probably no surprise, and we kind of knew what was coming because there had been a lot of inquiries, people emailing, texting, and they're like, man, I want to become a flight paramedic. What should I do? What is it like? What are the steps I should take? So this podcast was released on May 23rd, 2018, and this was a podcast you did with the co-founder of Flight Reged, Mr. Evan Klontsch. That one just had about 11,500 downloads, and that was The Steps to Becoming a Flight Paramedic with Evan Klontsch.
Yeah, so this was a really fun podcast. I drove out to the area he lives in, about an hour from my house. We sat down, had lunch, kind of did it in a restaurant, and it was great to see him and, you know, catch up and just be able to share that with him. You know, I think this was definitely a podcast that snuck up on me.
Yeah.
And we had requests about this podcast for probably a year previous. And again, this is where I have to open my mind up because we're a clinical podcast.
Yeah.
And so I pushed back. I kind of, you know, I mean, I listen. I read every email. I respond to every email. But I just wasn't convinced. And I think that's a reminder in business. And I've told you this 100 times. That you may have all the ideas. You may have a vision in something. But your consumer base, your audience, they're going to tell you what they want.
Sure. And they certainly did in this particular case.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there is no question. So what do you think it was about this particular podcast that drove it to the top three in 2018? Because we get a lot of downloads. People listen all over the world to the Flight Reged podcast. So what do you think it was about this one? Like, was it a combination of just Evan's personality, his sort of down-home, sort of attitude? What do you think it was that people enjoyed about it?
Well, I think it was probably great to hear him. We've referred to him forever. He was the backbone of starting this company. I mean, I've said it many times. Flatbridge Ed wouldn't be Flatbridge Ed without Evan. And sorry, it gets me emotional every time.
Yeah.
It's just important to understand his expertise and what he brought to not only Flatbridge Ed, but he was a phenomenal flight paramedic. I mean, absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
And he just walked away.
Yeah.
He's doing ministry. I mean, absolutely top notch.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, he's humble, and the way he carries himself and his professionalism and all that. I mean, I think that, you know, that was one of the things that I wanted to be able to share this. I think he has a lot of insight and wisdom. And I think also when you look at just us discussing this topic, there's a lot of people out there that have a lot of questions. I mean, I think there was probably 6 or 7 people in this class, right? We're in New Jersey right now, that asked about that podcast or asked about advice about becoming a flight nurse or flight paramedic. And I don't want to exclude the nurses.
Sure.
You know, we did a podcast with Kelly Miller on how to become a flight nurse. And I'll tell you, it barely missed making the top 5. It was actually number 6.
Yeah.
And we recorded that in October.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Kelly, I know you're listening. You listen. You barely missed it. And really, when you look at the amount of downloads in the last 3 months of the year, it almost overtook number 5.
Yeah.
You know, it was so close. I mean, I think it by 300 downloads, right? Very close. So I think nurses and paramedics alike, they have a lot of questions. They have a lot of anxiety. This is a dream of theirs. And so any insight, anything that can be derived from maybe experiences that we have, you know, is definitely something that pulls people in. And I think that's probably why it was so popular. And I think that was what I was surprised about, is the amount of emails I got after that podcast just blew my mind. It made me kind of eat crow, really.
Yeah.
You know? I
love
comments.
It when that happens. That's really good.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, you know, I've heard from I have personal relationships with 2 people that have gone from the ground side to the flight side. And when they made that leap, they were at the top of their game, top of the game on the ground side. And one thing that resonated for both of these top-notch paramedics was they were like a fish out of water. The game was completely different. They felt like they went from the top, and now they had no idea how to navigate just a regular call, because their whole everything about the flow of a call, it was like they had never been on a call before. And so I think a lot of it has to do with expectations and being humble. And I think Evan does a great job of being relatable in those kind of things. And I'll tell you, Scott Schmidt, one of our friends from Portland, he was one of them. Tyler Cristofoli was the other.
Those guys are absolutely smart in tech.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And they both had the same experience where they felt like there was nothing they hadn't seen, and not in an arrogant way. Not at all. But from an experiential standpoint, they felt like there's probably nothing that I'm going to see that's going to put me out of my comfort zone. But they were in for a surprise, both of those guys, they both have the sort of correct demeanor to realize, take a step back and say, this is all new to me. Doesn't mean I'm a bad paramedic. It just means that this particular situation that we're in is new, and I got to find my way through that. And that's when you lean on your partner, you lean on the experience of others, and you are open to learn and you're humble, in my opinion.
Anyway. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's great. And I think, you know, I just did a keynote talk at WIMSA.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I asked Tyler, he said, what do you want to talk on? I said, you pick for me. And I did that for a reason. Challenge me. Give me a topic I'm not coming up with, right?
Yeah.
And so the topic for the keynote was the path to expertise. And I think when I really had to reflect, it was very hard for me to write that presentation, that lecture. But one of the things I realized is we have to always have a beginner's heart.
Mm. I love that. A beginner's heart. Yeah.
And I think when you have a beginner's heart, you realize that you're teachable, you're humble, you're willing to, you know, continuously learn, and I think that is key. If you can't have a beginner's heart, you make it to the point where you feel like you're unteachable and you're a know-it-all, and when that happens,
I think that if people have the correct demeanor, the right, I don't know, outlook, I can't figure out the word I'm looking for, but it makes all the difference in the world when it comes to that situation, because I know that there are people out there that listen to this that struggle with that because they're afraid to have their confidence mistaken. I don't know if that's a word. Maybe mistaken for arrogance, and they struggle with that. And they don't want somebody to think just because I have got a certain set of skills and expertise in one area, it doesn't mean that I'm an arrogant person, right? Or that I can't learn anymore. And I know people struggle with that.
Yeah, I think that the important aspect to take away from what you just said is that, number one, you should never have to tell somebody how good you are. Right? Be slow to speak, quick to listen. I say that all the time.
Yeah.
You should never have to tell that. People will know.
Yeah. Right? One way or the other.
Absolutely, they're going to know. They're either going to know you're good or you're bad.
Or you're full of it.
Absolutely. And that's the best way to gain respect, is be quiet, do your job, and let your actions show how good you are. And that's all. Once you do that, I'm telling you, you've written your ticket. Yeah. You go the other route. I don't care if you're the best in the world, you know, you're going to come across the wrong way. And I think that is very, very important.
All right, let's move on to the number two podcast of 2018. And this is one that we didn't record we didn't release it until the end of October. So really, it only had about 2 months before we pulled the numbers. And this was a podcast that we got to record together when we were at AMTC. And we were introduced to Lane Abshire and Tara Couple, and they were at AMTC speaking about an incident that they came upon. And we decided to get them on a podcast as soon as we met them. We got to get these folks on there. And this was the nightmare scenario, Managing the Unimaginable, that was released October 27th, 2018, had just about 13,000 downloads. And what a story this was.
Oh, man.
Like, to this day, and I'm friends with them on Facebook. We send messages. We say hi to each other. We keep in contact. I cannot tell you what an impact their podcast had on people all over the world that have sent us messages on Facebook, via Twitter, sent emails about how their experience with the unimaginable scenario that they faced has literally been changing companies from the top down about safety, asking the what if questions, looking inward at the way they handle emergencies from a family unification standpoint, from a just companies are taking a look at themselves in the mirror from this podcast. And I think that is exactly the epitome of Flight Bridge Ed, and has been since the get-go, is how do we affect change? And in this particular case, it was literally letting somebody tell their story. And it's unbelievable to me. I mean, it's not unbelievable to me, because that's what we do. And God bless these two for the scenario that they went through, the pilot that had a stroke while they were mid-flight. They have a critical patient on board that is intubated, sedated, paralyzed. It's just an unbelievable story. And we couldn't do it justice by sort of talking about it. I mean, I just gave you the gist of it. You got to listen. If you haven't listened to it, you have got to listen to it. But we just stood there with our mouths open because we heard what had happened, but actually getting to talk to them and learning about the emotional roller coaster that these two people were on, it's just unbelievable to me.
Yeah, I think that was probably what hit me. I'm sure many of us, most of us, are the same way. We are a brotherhood.
Sure.
Right? Brothers and sisters. You know, it's about the person next to us, right? And I think, whether it's when I look at the Officer Down Memorial page, which I do usually every few weeks. I mean, yeah. I do. you know, my dad's a retired police officer. I just, you know, I was a police officer for a few years. I just think it's one of those things. Whether it's, you know, looking at any of our professions, whether that's police, fire, EMS, it is about the person next to us. And no matter who we see, if somebody loses their life, it truly does affect me.
Sure.
And I think it affects all of us. And I think that was probably what was hard for me, is to be in their presence and hear the emotion and hear some of the things they had to say. And
yeah. I mean, it is just an unbelievable story, yeah, of bravery, of putting yourself, duty first, and them both knowing full well that they were going to die.
Yeah.
And still making sure that the patient was taken care of, making sure they were taking care of the pilot who had suffered a major medical emergency. So you just got to listen to it. They have formed a bond that will stand the test of time. They went through something that was just unbelievable. And I think the best part about what happened to them is they want to share that story with the people that are listening right now. So it's important that if you have never listened to that, you go as soon as you can and you share that with as many people that you can and let them listen. And maybe that will create change in the agency that you're with, right? So it was just a great story, and we were so happy to have them on board. We were honored to have them. We gave them FlightBridgeEd challenge coins, which are very hard to come by the way. They are numbered individually, and we only give them to people that mean the world to us. And Tara and Lane, we love you guys, and we appreciate the fact that you came on and shared your story with us. And we're glad that you guys are doing well. It's just been about a year since that occurred. I saw that update just the other day. So,
yeah, I mean, I think to kind of add to what you're saying, I think, you know, if you haven't listened to this, listen to it. Obviously, we hear people all the time. We had people in the class that hadn't listened to it. We did the flight physiology lecture, Kames lecture, had people come up today during breaks and say, "Oh my gosh, I listened to it last night. I was like in tears." I think it goes to understanding situational awareness, crew resource management, working as a team, setting your emotions aside to get the job done, you know, all things that I think a lot of us are good at, most of us are good at, you know, where you got to check your emotions at the door. And then I think the other thing is going through the grieving process, going through the PSD process and how they process that, how they got help. And I got to applaud AeriVac Life Team for, you know, I have worked for AeriVac Life Team. I think they're a very, very, very safe company. I think, you know, all companies are very safe, you know, for the most part. I think, you know, I can only attest for the companies I've worked for.
Sure.
I've worked for Air Methods, very, very safe. And PHI, I know, is very safe. I think, you know, obviously there's safe companies all over the country, but it's how you handle situations like that. It's not that there was anything unsafe going on.
Correct.
But that's where you got to take these opportunities, and they have to go back and train. And I know they put this out to the entire staff, because I've heard it in all these classes,
yeah,
that staff have had received that training. They got to hear what happened, and I think that's huge. So, you know, just applaud them.
Yep, absolutely. All right, well, it's that time. It's time to look at the number one podcast of 2018. And I will tell you, from a production standpoint, I produce all the podcasts, it was a complete freaking nightmare. Right? But here is your number one podcast for 2018. Came out on July 13th, 2018. And this was the 5 hottest questions in mechanical ventilation that had our old buddy Mike Herman from Enloe Flight Care in Chico, California. Mike had this idea. He's like, let's do a back and forth, because he's a smart guy. He reads that vent. I love hanging out with him when he's with you, because I'll tell you, he's a boatload of questions, and he knows what he is talking about, and he really challenges you. So this was a great discussion about the 5 hottest topics in mechanical ventilation. And I know one of the things, one of the major takeaways was the old adage, the age-old question of pressure versus volume in ventilation. So what were the highlights? What do you remember? And by the way, this podcast had over 15,000 downloads, and that was pretty awesome. So what do you remember about this?
Well, I think it's funny that this is the top one. It doesn't surprise me. No, I've already told him.
Oh, okay.
I've already told him, and he was giddy as a schoolgirl.
Yeah.
I think you know. My hat's off to Mike. I think you know, we've built a friendship, and he's a great guy. He actually is one of our editors for Flatbridgehead, and he's phenomenal with that. Just so glad to have him as part of the team. He does challenge me. Sometimes he frustrates me. I want to throat punch him.
Yeah.
You know, he's listening. He'll hear that.
Yeah.
But I think that's good, and I think we need to be challenged. And I think
we need people like that in our lives.
Absolutely.
Right.
It's not that he's challenged me in a bad way.
I think
you know, he has definitely a different way of thinking than I do. And I'm probably more black and white, and he's definitely shades of pink, right?
Yeah.
And so I think the hot topic, there was multiple areas.
Yeah.
I highly recommend you listen to it. Mechanical ventilation is always a big, big thing. That's where we wanted to do this, is look at, you know, the tough areas that we focus on. And we really focused a lot on volume versus pressure. And it's not that volume or pressure is better. And I think I took that stance. I just feel like there's some benefit to pressure. I think that when you look at specific ventilators, if you're looking at the Revell, the LTV 1200, you're looking at the impact, you have volume or pressure. You look at the Hamilton T1, you're always pressure, right? You're volume targeted, but it's a pressure targeted breath.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have no leeway. You have to go pressure. And I just think there's quite a few positives to pressure over volume. Now, there are certain patients that obviously will benefit with volume over pressure. And I think that's where, again, we talked about this today in the class. I talked about this with mechanical ventilation. You talked about this with RSI. Is a lot of these things, or I should say I talked about this with balloon pump therapy. You know, I bet a five-year-old could run a balloon pump console. But a five-year-old doesn't have the critical thinking to understand, well, man, we've got all these vasopressors, these inotropes. We've got to titrate this chemical balloon to make sure the mechanical balloon is effective, right? We don't want to counterbalance them. We need to be able to critically think through that. RSI, you could teach a five-year-old to regurgitate the medications.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't teach a five-year-old to critically think and identify,
when to
man,
give those.
This patient doesn't fall into that category. We can't ventilate them or oxygenate them. They can't get a paralytic, right? So I think that's where you know, we really have to focus on. We have to focus on when to do things, when not to do things. And that's where volume versus pressure, you know, not all patients are going to fit the volume, you know, thought process. Not all patients are going to fit the pressure thought process. Obviously, again, if you have a ventilator like the Hamilton that is always, you know, pressure, you're a little bit more limited, but there's a lot of different ways to deliver that pressure with that ventilator that makes it very useful. So I really, really enjoyed this podcast. Love doing it. You know, we had to record that podcast three times because of technical difficulties, which that is not something that normally happens.
Yeah.
Normally I can sit down and knock out a podcast
right. And
first take and it's done. There might be a few little tweaks you do, but truly it's pretty much
for
wrapped
sure.
up. Well, that wasn't the case.
Certainly
I almost
not.
Scrapped the podcast because I was so busy. It was during my time off.
Yeah.
And that was the last thing I wanted to be
messing just,
with.
It wasn't working.
No.
It just wasn't working. But we finally got it, and
yeah.
it was great.
So much love to Mike Herman and the Enlow crew. Absolutely one of the most favorite places that we've gotten to go to. Seriously.
Yep.
It is absolutely a phenomenal place. Like, if I had to relocate and that was a place I could pick to go, I would work for Enlow Flat Care.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Amazing people, tight, small knit group that has each other's back. It's always a pleasure to head down there. It really is. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this particular episode of the Top 5 Podcast of 2018. We just want to give everyone a reminder. We've got Fast 19 coming up this May in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, just a smidge outside of Nashville. We've got an all-star lineup. I want you to go to the Flatbridgehead podcast or the Flatbridgehead website. Take a look at the lineup for yourself. Make your own judgment. But I'm telling you, for $295 to get in, plus not to mention all the pre-cons that we have, which, by the way, are almost sold out. So if you're interested in doing the Glottica class with James DeCanto, Tyler Cristofoli, Sam Ireland, that whole group, get some salad on. If you're interested in the LVAD course that Alan Wolf is going to be putting on, or the ventilator class that Eric's doing, or the Hantevi instructor course, you got to get on it because you're going to miss out if you don't. But look at the lineup. It's going to be phenomenal. And we've said it before. We'll say it again. We'll put it up against any conference. Any conference, especially here in the States, it's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, I think that's the key. You know, it's hard to, you know, I'm not probably very good at that, but I think when you look at the lineup and you look at the speakers that we have coming in, you look at the speakers that speak at, a lot of these speakers smoke at Smack.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
You know, and they wanted to come speak at our conference. Yeah. So I think that's such a humbling thing for me. If you want a different experience, you guys have trusted Flatbridge Ed from the start. Trust me, you will not be sorry.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There will be no regrets. And you don't want to have FOMO when it comes to coming to Fast 19. By the way, that's the fear of missing out. Because I promise you, we had a lot of people that didn't come to Fast 18 that regretted it.
It's all the social media buzz.
We're literally, I'm not making that up. That is absolutely the truth. We have people that are bringing 12 people with them. They're bringing their medical director with them because they know it's going to be a quality experience. So we're super excited about that. Go to flightbridgeed.com, hit the Fast 19 tab. You will see all the speakers. You'll see the schedule. We have a couple awards that we're going to be giving out. We have the Excellence in Leadership. We have the Clinical Excellence Award. Nominate somebody today. Go to the Fast 19 and you'll see the awards tab. Nominate a colleague of yours, a medical director, a nurse, a paramedic, whatever it happens to be. If they fit the bill, let's get their name in there. We want to select high quality people to get these awards that we'll be giving out each year at the Fast Symposium. So it's definitely going to be worth it. So on behalf of Eric Bauer, this has been Mike Verkest. You've been listening to the Flightbridge Ed podcast. Again, we appreciate your subscriptions. Go to iTunes, to Google Play, whatever it is you happen to subscribe on, and make sure we're in your favorites. You don't want to miss an episode of the Flightbridge Ed podcast. You guys have a great day, and we will talk to you soon.
This has been a production of the Flightbridge Ed podcast, leading the way in pre-hospital critical care and emergency medicine education.